This morning, my wife is actually here, but I saw that there were two services, and I told her, honey, we had a long weekend doing a retreat. I said, why don't you rest this morning, and I'll come and get you for second service. And then I realized the first service is English, second service is Spanish, so Patsy's going to practice her Spanish the second service. I think she's got uno and dos down, but that's about it, you know. So she's not here for that reason. If you met my wife, you'll like me more. So that's the only sad part about not her not being here. Well, he asked me to be a part of this mini-series, and he asked me, what do you think would be good to talk about? And I said, how about life is too short to live it alone? Life is too short to live it alone. Ready for this? When was the last time you came to church and you heard a message that if you put into practice, that you would outlive others by 22%? When was the last time you came to church and heard a message that said that if you do what I'm about to tell you, you're going to be 50% more likely to survive whatever sickness is ever going to come your way, no matter what your economic level is, your race, your gender? How many are glad you're here this morning? Dude, man, I mean, we're all going for that 80-year routine, right? Well, here's what it is. It's not medicinal oils. It's not some kind of diet. It's not some level of exercise. Here's the number one thing that causes you to live longer. Close friends. Hear that again. The relationships that you form in your life, not just your family, but close friends outside of your family context, are going to increase the health and strength of your life. Listen to this. Having few friends is similar to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. See, if you have good friends, you can light up. No, that's not what that meant. That's not what that meant. In fact, it's more dangerous not to have friends than it is to be obese. And not exercising to have friends is going to be more healthy for you than being thin, not smoking, and exercising. Now, I have to admit, my mind immediately went to, okay, I'm going to get a bunch of friends, and I'm going to start eating Lay's potato chips and vanilla ice cream, and I'm going to cut that in half, and that'll be a pretty good shot for me, right? But listen to that. Friendships are at the heart of everything. At the heart of everything we go through. And yet we choose to live our lives in isolation far too often. And let me make it really clear. Real friends, not Facebook friends. It's not the guy in the office that you know, down the hall from you, you exchange Spinal Tap quotes with. That's an inside trader story, evidently. But the point is, it's real friends, not Instagram friends. It's people that you have some kind of contextual relationship with. So I want to take you to a passage of Scripture that's going to help you develop those kinds of friends. But let me tell you a story about one of those things that happened to me so you'll understand. I like to exercise still. And we just did a 5K through Johnson Trail somewhere up in the hills of Santa Maria, up by San Ynez. Not San Ynez, where is that? San Luis. And I was recalling one time I was down in Ventura, I was going to go for a run by the beach, and I was just going to do a 5K. And my daughter-in-law says, hey, Dad, you mind if I run with you? I said, no, I'd be glad to have some company. So she laces up and starts to go run with me. I should have remembered when she was lacing up that she had already run a marathon. She was really a good athlete, and then I was thinking, you know, I should have thought about that before I said yes. So we started out, went for a run. Now, here's the first thing I recognized when I ran with my daughter-in-law. She runs faster than I do. I run kind of like I lean forward, and then I try to keep moving and not fall down. You know, that's basically the way I work, you know, just like, don't fall down, just keep running. But she's really keeping a pace. So now I'm having to keep a pace because every man in this place knows if the woman's running fast, we're running with the woman. Right, guys? I mean, that's such a miserable pride thing, but I was there. And so now I'm running faster than I normally run. Then here's the second thing I noticed, and it didn't take very long, because 5K is what I usually run, but 5K is where she turns around. So now we're running a 10K. I'm not only running faster, but I'm now going to run further than I have planned to run or even like to run. And then I didn't notice it until we were quite some time into the run. Then I realized I was actually having fun. I was running faster, further, and it is a word, funner. See, when I run by myself, I have to actually think about rewards I will give myself. If you finish this, I'll give you a Dr. Pepper. With a mound. So I have to do kind of mind tricks to say, you know, I'm doing Jedi mind tricks on myself just to finish this thing, right? And here I am with her, and she's talking the whole time. I'm just listening because I got to breathe, right, you know? So she's running like crazy, and I'm just running along. We're running further, and all of a sudden, I realized this is funner. I started seeing things I hadn't seen because most of the time my head is down and I'm suffering. But now I'm looking at the beautiful scenery around me and I'm enjoying everything. And I realized when I got home that night, I was journaling on my day and I wrote this phrase in the top of my journal. Everybody needs running partners. Everybody needs, and that's the metaphor I would use using my message today. That the relationships we need in our life that help us, ready, to live life in a kind of a pace that we could have never imagined. That instead of holding back, we are going for it. Instead of a diminished distance in our life, we are making far more accomplishments and territory claiming than we could have imagined. And along the way, we're actually having fun in this. That's a pretty cool life. And I think the metaphor of everybody needs running partners is because you will not live that kind of life without friends in your life. So here's the two things we're going to try to do today. One is we want to craft out the kinds of things that describe that kind of friendship so you can be that kind of friend to others. And also that you will look for that kind of relationship as well. So it's both give and take. If you want friends, be a friend. If you want to have people friendly to you, you have to be friendly to them. So what does it take to be a good running partner? Take a look at this passage of Scripture in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 11 and verse 12. Paul will use a different metaphor. He talks about fathers dealing with their own children, but think of it as running partners. But I'll read the text. For you know that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God who calls you into his kingdom and glory. The whole purpose of relationships are to provide you with encouragement, comfort, and urging. We're going to take those one at a time. But there's an outcome to this. The outcome is not just to experience those traits, but the outcome is that your life would live worthy. And I don't mean you measure up to some kind of standard. That's not that kind of worthy. It's the worthy that says that your life is appropriately weighted, that there is value and dimension and meaning to your life, that you live it out to the fullest. It's what Jesus would have said, where the enemy comes to rob, kill, destroy, he comes to give you life and that you might live it to the full. Yeah. And so this worthiness is that faster, further, funner. That's what that is all about. So what does it take? Well, take a look at this first one. Running partners will always provide you with encouragement. What is encouragement? Encouragement is literally where other people are in your life or you're in their life to put courage back in where it's been drained or squeezed out by life's experience. We get the word discouraged because we've lost our courage. Our courage has been dissed. But encourage is when that discourage has been placed back and others are coming alongside to help encourage us to put courage back into our lives. Now, in your life, as you live it, life will squeeze it. It will try to quench it. It will try to erode the confidence and the encouragement that God naturally wants you to have. What are some of the things that cause discouragement? Well, I look to Joshua chapter 1 to try to get some of my understanding of that. And the reason I do is it seems like the least likely character to need encouragement would have been a man named Joshua. If you read about him in the history of the scriptures, you realize he was a warrior. And in all the battles he won, he was an incredible warrior, incredible leader of God's people, second in command to Moses, and then eventually became the leader of God's people himself and took the land of promise. There's a whole book that's written in his name. And he's the least likely character, I think, to have heard these words from God: be strong and courageous. I can think of a whole list of people in the Bible I think were insecure that would need that phrase. But the one person who received the phrase of encouragement more than anybody else was a man named Joshua. Why? Let me suggest some things, and you might find yourself there. Joshua had been at a place where he's now, Moses is gone, and he's about to enter the land of promise, and he is responsible to lead God's people in. So this is what all of God's people have been waiting for, to arrive at this place of promise. And now, it's his responsibility. Why did God have to say to him, be strong and courageous? Because he had been here before. 40 years earlier, he was one of 12 spies that was sent out by Moses and to come back and give a report. And he did. He came back with Caleb and gave a good report. We can take this land because God's with us. Even though these guys are giants and they're formidable, we can do this. But the other 10 spies won the day. And that entire generation was lost in a wilderness wandering because they didn't believe God could say, move in. So he's back at a place, not where he personally failed to believe, but where his leadership was unable to help others pursue their tomorrow. And so now he's at this place where he's attempted something and he's failed at it, and he's back at it again. Have you ever tried something and failed and then have to go back and do that one all over again? And you know what it's like? Oh, I messed up that test. I wonder if I'm going to get it this time. Or I messed up in this relationship. How do I get it right? Whatever it is, some kind of athletic thing, you rode a horse, the old thing, you fell off, and you want to get back on. And so this whole thing about we've tried something and we failed, and then we become fearful whether that we could ever accomplish it. See, failed attempts squeeze courage out of your life. They make you start living in suspicion of yourself whether you can pull it off. And so what happens is when you have good friends around you, they won't let you buy into the past failure being the excuse for why you can't move forward in your life. So failed attempts happen. But Joshua not only heard be strong and courageous, he heard it again. Be strong and, then God said, very courageous. It's like he took out a highlighter and decided, I want to make sure you get this. Be strong and very courageous. Well, what was that about? Why very courageous? Well, I wonder if the very courageous had to do with this kind of thing of what I call impending conflict. See, he's going to go into the land of promise, and God says, I'm going to give you this land, and now you're going to fight for every inch of it. Have you ever decided to start something, and then pretty soon into it, you started to think, I shouldn't have started this. I think I'm going to quit. And we've all done that, right? I don't think I'm going to. And then we start a major project. We start an educational goal. We start something that requires, we start a diet. Oh, Jesus, help us. Anyway, we start all this kind of stuff happening. And then we get into it, and it really starts to put the pressure on us, and we're ready to pull out. I wonder if Joshua was being encouraged, but he saw what was ahead, and he's thinking, you know, I'm just not sure I want to do that. I'm not sure I want to pay that price. And that God would have to say to him again, be strong and very courageous. That's what good friends do. Good friends know that when somebody signs up for a difficult time, they're going to need somebody coming alongside them and coming by and giving that encouragement. because the experience of life starts to squeeze it out, and they're going to show up to not let them give up, not quit. Don't you quit on me. You can make it. But there's a third time that Joshua hears from God, and this time it's really crazily, wild, radically sharp. He says this, "Have not I commanded you? Be strong and courageous." You see, courage is not a suggestion. And when it says it as a command, may I just say that more than a command, like I've got to be, it's saying you get to be. When God is commanding something, he's not trying to put you in a difficult place. He's telling you that I am so working in your life that you need to know you can be courageous. It is really possible that in this situation where it seems like all of that's been pushed out of your life, yes, you can be courageous. And that's where those friendships come along. And all of a sudden, it's like you're borrowing courage from somebody else to begin to believe again. And those friendships surround you. And all of a sudden, it's like you say, I can, I can, I can. You know, we have such a distance between oftentimes the promise that God gives us and its realization. That what originally we felt like God said to us in its fulfillment is so separated that we begin to wonder if God ever did talk to us. 400 years earlier, Abraham had been promised that land would be his. 40 years earlier, a group of people who were right on the cusp of taking it chose not to. Have you ever had a promise in your life? Something prophetically spoken over your life, what your life was to be about? Or has there been just a deep kind of seated dream way back in your heart that you believe God had whispered to you, and yet the distance between that kind of early system warning of that God was up to something in your life, that the distance between that and its fulfillment had become so large that you began to be unbelieving about it as a possibility in your life. Well, what about friends who call it out? What about friends who haven't forgotten? What about friends who still believe that what God said to you is still true? And all of what you're going through right now is not to keep you from it, it's to shape you for it. And that's what friends do. They get in the middle of this whole thing and they start telling you encouragement. They put in courage one more time. So the very first thing that good friends provide is simply encouragement. Coming to say, I'm going to help you with your courage issue. Who do you have in your life right now who's going to speak to you during those times when courage has been squeezed out of you? Who's going to be there and to encourage you? Who's the person in your life that you don't have to initiate the contact with because they're already initiating it and they're coming toward you, believing in you when you've quit believing in yourself? That's what friends do. And life is too short not to have them. And really, life will be shortened without them. What do running partners provide? Encouragement. And you know what they're saying? Yes, you can. Everybody say that. Yes, you can. See, that's what you're doing when you're saying encouragement. You're looking at that other friend and you're saying, yes, you can. And when they think they can't. Look at the next verse, it says, or next word says, it says that they provide comfort. Well, I think we all understand comfort, but may I enlarge that comfort to say, I think there's a way of looking at comfort that would be helpful, and that think of comfort as somebody providing you with perspective that you've lost. Perspective is stepping back and seeing the big picture. If you're dealing with a problem in your business or in some kind of athletic endeavor with a team you're coaching, something like that. So you can be working on the details, but ever so often you got to get back up in the balcony so you can see the whole play. Ah, I see what's going on. There are some adjustments. And perspective allows you to see something that's really important. You know what happens to our lives is we are living them in the heat of the battles. And what happens to us is we lose perspective on our life. And all we see is what is in front of us in this moment. This failure, this suffering, this challenge, this situation, this unresolved conflict. All we see is whatever is in front of us. And we start losing perspective about our life. What friends do when they are comforting you is they're helping you to gain a perspective that you've lost. Life can give you such a challenge that you can't see the forest for the trees. And then you need somebody who's standing back from that, who understands what you're going through and understands the God that you're serving and is providing you with a perspective that you don't have anymore. They get the pain you're in, but they're not in it with you. They understand what you're going through, but they're not walking it through. If you are a part of a 12-step program of any kind, the reason that is so vital and healthy to you, because you're surrounded with people who have been where you're trying to get. And they're at where you're trying to get to when they've been where you've been at. And they understand what you're going through. And when you say, I can't see any way getting past this stuff, they are saying, yes, there is a possibility, because I have a perspective that you don't have. If you've gone through some kind of cancer treatment and then you find somebody who's going through it, I'm telling you, I have become the best friends to men all over this country because I went through prostate cancer. And I survived it being outside of my prostate and having it all sorts of problems. And here I am cancer-free for several years. And now when men call me, they call me because I provide them with a perspective that their current situation, they don't know how to get. And if you've gone through something in your life, if you dealt with a teenager in your life, you survived that era. Then trust me, people who have kids who are now becoming adolescents are wanting to meet you and have you as a friend. If you've got a husband marriage kind of situation going south, you want a couple who went through it already to tell you, I'm going to give you some perspective on what God's up to here. Perspective is needed, and that's what good friends provide, and that's what you need. This last year, there was a number of artists who died. One of them was Chester Bennington from Linkin Park. And one of the most haunting videos I have ever seen is Crawling. And the video shows the pain of a young lady, and it is depicted as having experienced incest. And the words of that song were, "These wounds, they will not heal." The tragedy is that very gifted artist had deep wounds that weren't having to do with that kind of failure, but because he couldn't overcome his opioid addictions, and he ended up committing suicide. And in fact, the song became his epitaph. "The wounds I have will never heal." If he'd been surrounded by different kinds of friends, he may have found out, yes, those wounds can heal. He needed to find somebody who had been through those wounds and who could tell him, you don't have to live betrayed by the failure of your past. And the reason we have friends in our life is because we need to know something. These wounds will heal. When I have this kind of friendships in my life, when I'm providing these kinds of friendships in my life, when I get a call and I get to talk to a man about what he's going through, I know that I am comforting him because I'm providing him with perspective. And here's what I'm saying to that person. Here's what people say to me. It's no longer, yes, you can. These are friends who are telling me, yes, you will. You will get through this. You will get over this. You will get around this. You're going to get by this. You're going to get over this. I'm going to tell you it's going to happen. Because when you're in the middle of going through it, there doesn't seem to be any expiration date on suffering. There's no expiration date on pain. You're just going through it. But the people who stand outside of it, who've been in your shoes, who have felt that pain, who have suffered like you, have gone through that process, those are the friends you need to have in your life who's saying, yes, you will. Everybody say it. Yes, you will. So I'm not only yes, I can, but I'm going to get encouragement, but yes, I will. I'm going to get perspective. Now, there's a third one. And the third one, it says, an urging. Urging. Let me say something about how the scripture puts things in orders. That I have this confidence that the Holy Spirit is so good at authoring what he wanted said, that even the ordering of words is important because of what it teaches. You notice of the three things there, which ones came first? Encouragement and comfort before you get to urge. Why is that? Because when you provide friendships that encourage and comfort, you earn the right to urge. You earn the right to put your finger in somebody's chest and call them out. But if you start with urging, no matter how sincerely motivated you are, and I've talked with leaders who are brutal, and they say, I believe this is what God has wanted me to be. It's a gift I have, and it's going to help people. And I said, it will kill them unless it's done in a context of encouragement and comfort. And what will happen is your friendship will become abusive. And people who treat you that way, no matter how well-intended they are or how much you respect them, if you are only being urged by people and not having a context for comfort and encouragement, that is a relationship that won't prolong your life. That will ruin your life. That is emotional abuse. And you don't need to put up for that at all. Get some new friends. And listen, dads, I'm going to talk to dads now. Maybe there might be a mom in here who's a little bit like this, but mostly dads. Dads, some of you have a gift of urging. And what you need to do with that gift is slow it down. When your son comes home and he's got a B+, you don't tell him he was only 5 points away from an A. When he made one interception but didn't run it back for a touchdown, you don't tell him if he would have turned right, he had a free lane. You're going to cheer whatever accomplishments he had. Because there's going to come a time when you're going to need to put your finger in your son's chest and call him out. But if you haven't provided encouragement, he's just going to be beat up and bruised by you and end up becoming alienated from you, from the very love that is driving you to urge him. Every one of us, here's the good news. You are not expected to get urging unless you're in a context of comforting and encouragement. But for all of you who like warm milk and hot chocolate chip cookies, get ready for this. If your pastor never urges you, and he's only this comforting, he's only this, you know, encouraging guy, and you never feel like the pastor puts his finger in his chest, guess what? You will never arrive at what your life was supposed to be. Now, you may not want to start off with urging, but if you say urging isn't a part of your life, you don't respond to that well, then learn how. Because there are things in your life that need to change. And they're not going to change because somebody gave you courage or put their arm around you and said, it's going to be okay. They're going to change because somebody come up and slap you upside the head and say, knock this stuff off. Or in the words of your pastor when we were praying prior to the service, quit jacking around. Proverbs 27, verse 6. Wounds from a friend can be trusted. What kind of friends do you have who love you enough not to put up with this stuff? One of my children was going through a terrible time, bulimia and other elements. because of tragedy that happened in their life that none of us could have foreseen when they were quite young, began to have serious thoughts of suicide. And our entire family did an intervention. Boy, that was tough and painful. But we loved her too much, and we had provided such an environment of comfort and encouragement that we knew that we had the authority and the right to call her out and say, you're not going that way in your life. You see, the reason we need friends to urge us is because in our life there are areas that need to change. Robert Quinn wrote a book called Deep Change or Slow Death. And the whole thesis is simply this. You will either go through deep change or slow death, and there is no option. So when we become the kinds of friends who do this, or we have the friends who offer this to us, they are stopping the slow decaying of life that reduces us to something less than we ever were meant to be, and call out a change in us that is possible that we can embrace. I went for a ride with my son, and if you knew my son Michael, was an amazing professional athlete, still is, but he was a national champion in racing and cycling. He was actually one of the training partners of Lance Armstrong early in his career. And so my son decided one day, he says, Dad, Monday it was, he says, I'm going to do a recovery ride. A recovery ride is after you've had a big race day, you don't sit the next day, you actually go ride. And the recovery ride is to get all that lactic acid out of your system and get you back to a place where you're ready to go. So you're not riding hard. He says, would you like to go on a ride with me? And I'm thinking, this is a recovery ride? I can do a recovery ride. So I went on a ride with him. Now, you may not know this area, but I'll try to describe it to you as painfully as I can. We started in Ventura, and then we rode to Santa Paula. I thought we were going to turn around and come back. But he said, let's ride up to Ojai. And I used the word up a lot. So we're riding up the mountains out of Santa Paula up into Ojai. Also, this is an aside because it's so fun, that as we're riding up, he has to tell me, you have to keep a certain pace. I can't drop below this speed. It's not good. So the only way we could keep that certain pace is my son rode up beside me, put his hand behind my seat as he says, just keep riding, Dad. And he's now pushing the pedals, and he's pushing me up a hill. And as we're getting up towards the top of the hill, there's two young co-eds that are walking down the street. My son is pushing me up a hill. There's still a brokenness in my life when it relates to how I'm going to be seen. He's got his hand pushing me up the hill, and as these two young co-eds come by, I yell out, hang on, Michael, I've almost got you to the top. So we get on the top of the mountain, and we ride across the Ojai Valley. He says, hey, let's take a lake. Let's go around the lake, and we'll come out by the coast, which is a whole nother series of hills. So we do all this ride, and now 56 miles later, on a recovery ride, we only have about a mile and a half left to go to the house. And where we're at is just a real slow grade. No more hills now. Just a real slow grade up to our house. But I want you to know I'm pretty much done. And that slow grade looks like Mount Kilimanjaro now, okay? And I'm just kind of putting my sense of, you're doing fine, Dad. You did a great job. See, I'm getting all this encouragement. You did a great job today. And I know this was not in your sweet spot, but he says, you did a great job. We're just going to finish now, so just keep on pedaling. You're going to make it. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. And, you know, I'm going along. And then I see my son looking back. And so I look back with him to see what's behind us. And I see this young man with a beach cruiser jeans, flip-flops, and a red flannel shirt flapping in the wind. And he's gaining on us. We're on some high-tech road bikes. This guy is on a beach cruiser in flip-flops, jeans, and a red flannel shirt, and he's pulling on us. Well, evidently something clicked inside of my son. Dad, I want you just to pedal a little bit harder now. I want you to reach a little bit deeper. We're going to get up the hill because we're not going to let a guy with jeans, flip-flops, and a red flannel shirt catch up to us. I looked at my son and said, son, I am so tired. I am so out of it that I'm ready to stop and applaud as he goes by. And then my son, all of a sudden, something comes over him. I don't know if it was the Marine Corps stuff or it was the FBI stuff. I'm not sure which part of his personality came out, but it was like, I don't want to meet this guy in a dark alley thing, okay? And he looks over at me and he says, what, you're telling me you're riding this French bike, wearing Italian bike clothing, we've got some of the finest equipment you've ever seen, you're telling me you can't dig deep enough to beat a guy in a red flannel shirt? You even shave your legs. Are you telling me we can't get up this hill? Yeah, I'll tell you what you're going to do. You're going to start pedaling. You're going to start digging deep like you've never done before, and you're going to get up that hill because that guy is not going to pass us. I said, you bet I am. I started digging. I pedaled. I was crying and screaming. And as we're riding and I'm building up momentum, I start to look back. He says, don't look back. You'll only encourage him. I knew we were in race mode then, man. I was like, don't look back. Okay, I won't look back. And we finally crest the hill where we're coming to my house. And I said, he says, you did it, Dad. We did it. We beat him to the top. I said, we did. Oh, wow. Where is he? He says, I don't know. He turned off a long way ago. Oh, gee. Oh. What friends do you have in your life that are not going to let you cop out? They're not going to let you dig deep. Who are you that kind of friend to? God put you in this family for a reason. Because it's too late to live your life alone. God put you in this place to find friends, to find those kinds of people who are going to encourage you, comfort you, and yes, urge you to become the person God always wanted you to be. Listen to what it says. I'm going to ask the worship team to come back and join me as I'm concluding here. Listen to what it says in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 9 through 12. In fact, I need to say, put a comma on that and go back for a second. It was, yes, you can, yes, you will. We said that, but we need to say the third thing. Yes, you must. Let's say that. Yes, you must. See, that's where we're just saying, I'm not going to let you die. I'm not going to let you be less. I'm calling you out. My son called me out. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 9 through 12. Two are better than one, because they have a good return for their work, and a cord of three strands is not easily broken. You probably heard that sometimes at a wedding. The husband, the wife, and God are wrapped up in a threefold cord strand, and that's a nice, beautiful metaphor, but that's not what that text is saying. That text is saying this, that when one falls, there's another to pick them up. When one is cold, there's another to keep them warm. And when one is facing odds that are insurmountable, there's somebody to stand with them. The threefold cord of encouragement, comfort, and urging is the kind of running partner that's going to help you run faster, further, and funner. When my son went into the Marine Corps and went to officer's candidate school. The abruptness of being greeted by the sergeant instructors was pretty much an awakening call. They got off the bus, made them throw their stuff on the ground. It took them quite some time to figure out where their stuff was afterwards. His life was not his own after that. And having that kind of challenge going on relentlessly, he was sitting in the back of a class once with a young man that he had barely met, another officer's candidate, a young Jewish man named Dan Gelman. Dan Gelman and him were sitting back there, and in between this lecture, Dan reaches over to my son and says, "If you help me get through this, I'll help you get through this." And then they did a knuckle bump. They became best friends, were best men in each other's wedding, and served together in the Marine Corps. All because they decided that circumstances had brought them together for a reason, and they were going to become the friends they needed in each other. Oh, someone's waiting for your friendship. Someone's waiting for you to be that gift to them. And you need to open your heart, become vulnerable enough to allow others to love you and care for you in that way. Just remember, it's just too late. It's just too late. Life is too short to live it alone. But the good news, if you listen and apply what I said today, you're going to live a whole lot longer than you thought. God bless you, church.